Hello and welcome to The Headquarters, the official podcast of RaptorsHQ.com. I'm your host, Sean Woodley, and I'm joined today, for the first time in quite a long time, by one of the best friends of the show, maybe the best friend of the show, John Gotis. How you doing, man?
Aw, that's so nice. That was better than the introduction that you just gave me on the podcast that you weren't recording, so thank God for shit software. I feel so good.
No, it's not shit software. I just forgot to literally press the record button. So.
Oh, okay. Sorry. Yeah, you have a whole operation over there. You're like a podcast Facebook Live machine.
The degree to which it's really primitive my setup over here. I record everything through my mic just through Audacity. So it's bringing me behind the curtain. Like, I don't have a program or anything. I had the program, and then a bunch of updates happened, and it didn't work with Skype anymore, which was super annoying. So now I just do it this way because the mic is that good.
Nice.
Yeah. How's it going with you, man? You moved, right? How's moving treat you?
Good. I have a new podcast den, I guess, a dedicated office space. It's good. I'm about a month in, 2 bedrooms now.
Awesome.
Step up in the world. I'm outside of like the downtown kind of area, but, yeah, it's all good.
Oh, sweet. Is that a bad thing to be outside of downtown Winnipeg?
No, it's just getting older.
Ah,
that's like what you do. You just kind of slowly move out.
Right, right. Yeah, I can't imagine I'll be living in Toronto forever because it's so damn expensive. But while we're here, I guess we'll enjoy it. On today's show, we got, I guess, a bunch of stuff to talk about. The off season is really stupid, and people like to get really dumb and ask dumb questions a lot of the time. And the Raptors, like, people want to try to rope the Raptors into everything that's happening in the league, and it's just not how it works. Like, that's very sort of self-centered, and I guess that's going to happen when you have people who are just diehard fans of one team. But, like, the Raptors aren't involved in all the goings-on in the league right now, and of course there was a trade today, Chris Paul going to the Rockets. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about the promotion of Bobby Webster to GM for the Raptors. I'm not sure what we can talk about with that, because really we don't know anything about Bobby Webster. Before today, there were, like, no pictures available of him online. I was pretty much just, like, thinking, oh, Bobby Webster, I think I've seen him walking around before. I'm pretty sure that's the guy everyone's talking about. Yeah, so we'll kind of get into that. We have so many questions today that it'll probably cover everything, so most of the show is going to be questions, and we'll probably just go on tangents from that. If you listen to last week's episode of Locked On Raptors where I had Will Liu on, it was supposed to be a mailbag podcast, and we got like 2 questions in and spent 25 minutes talking about Jonas Valanciunas, so I'd imagine that might happen today, but we'll see. We'll, of course, wrap things up as well with the episode sponsor and that random Raptors game and all that fun stuff. Maybe we'll turn it on the head. Maybe we'll make John turn it on me and make me guess who played in these games, because I haven't done that ever, and I feel bad always making John do it, because John, you're pretty bad at this game, so.
I'm awful. Yeah. I'm already planning on who the episode sponsor's going to be.
All right, fantastic. I'm putting that onus on you now. It's going to be a podcast first, an episode, whatever it is, 68, for me to do it. Oh, next week is a nice episode. Cool. Anyway, I'm a child. We're going to come back on the other side of this quick little ditty of music or whatever the hell we put in here, and get things going here on The Headquarters. Stick around. All right, welcome back to The Headquarters. Sean Woodley here with John Gotis. Gonna get into your questions in just a second, but I guess we should probably start with the big news of the day. I guess there was a couple pieces of news today, and actually the first one involved the Raptors, actually. I mentioned off the top that the Raptors aren't involved in everything, but I guess we can start with this. Phil Jackson let go by the New York Knicks earlier this morning. I guess I was really hoping that they were going to renege on that and just keep him around after threatening to part ways, but that didn't happen. Looks like the Knicks are in search of a new president, and Masai Ujiri was reported to be one of James Dolan's targets. I don't think people should worry about this too much. It's weird that it hasn't been sort of talked about by Masai Ujiri at all today, or the Raptors, but at the same time, Masai introduced Bobby Webster today at the press conference, and he was like, I'm not answering all these questions. Like, it's Bobby's day. I want him to have the spotlight, which, you know, good for him. Like, that's a very Masai move, and maybe it leaves people sort of up in the air for a couple days or whatever until he addresses it, but I think, you know, it would have been a weird time for him to do that in the press conference for the new GM. So it makes sense. What did you make of the whole stuff with the Knicks being after Masai Ujiri? We've been through this before. There were rumors about the Knicks wanting Masai Ujiri like a couple years ago as well. And the Raptors last summer signed him to, I think, a 4-year deal. He signed through like 2020 with the Raptors. And like, that doesn't mean everything. Like, teams can pay to get guys out of contracts and things like that. And you can have draft pick, you know, compensation and whatnot. But you know, that's kind of creepy, kind of freaky to have the Knicks, who have an endless pool of money, who are, you know, supposedly a marquee franchise, although I don't really know if you can call them that anymore. But are you at all worried about this Masai Ujiri stuff with the Knicks?
No, I don't think I'm worried. I think that it's kind of like it's kind of romantic, the idea that James Dolan has for Masai Ujiri. Like, he fleeced him on the Bargnani trade, and he's been talking about him ever since.
And the Melo trade. Yeah.
And the Melo trade. So it's been, yeah. I mean, you want the best. And Masai Ujiri is obviously one of the best when it comes to basketball operations in the league. I think that's pretty safe to say and not controversial. Yeah, but it's not going to happen. I think that the Raptors, you know, they talked about it, Bobby Webster, in the press briefing today, about the continuity of the team, the fact that everybody's pretty locked into their positions. The team, the hires up, have all pretty much been in place. You know, Webster's an internal hire. He's getting a promotion, essentially. They're not going outside for anything. And that's all reassuring, and I don't think that Masai Ujiri would leave all of that for a lesser position working under James Dolan. Like, that's just crazy. That's like going to a different job, taking less money to work for somebody you know is insane and has a band on the side. Like, you know, you don't have to be in Masai Ujiri's seat to think that that's insane.
Yeah, a little cross-promotion. Read Charlotte Wilder from SB Nation's piece about James Dolan's concert the night of the draft. It was excellent. But, yeah, I mean, I'm not sure it would be for less money if Masai were to leave. Like, I feel like the Knicks would probably pay him a ton of money to come and do what Phil Jackson was doing and to be the figurehead. Obviously, below James Dolan, and you're kind of at the mercy of whatever the hell Dolan's doing. But, like, I just don't see why Masai would want to go somewhere where, like, right now with the Raptors, he kind of has it made. He has pretty much full autonomy over the team. The ownership seems pretty cool with whatever he wants to do. He's got the green light to pay the tax. He's got the green light to blow it all up and restart. And, like, with the Knicks, you're gonna have that pressure. You have pretty much nothing to start with aside from Kristaps, which is a pretty good building block. And maybe Frank Ntilikina is going to be good. But, like, it's hard to say at this point, you know, a week after he's been drafted. And I think the Raptors situation is a lot better set up for Masai, where he can kind of do whatever he wants. He's not answering to anybody, really, aside from just like a conglomerate that doesn't seem to really care. And it just seems like a perfect spot. And the other thing, too, is like Masai hasn't even had an opportunity, really, to make this team in his image. I mean, he started on the periphery. He's got the D-League team going together, or the G-League team, I guess it is now. He's got that going strong over the first couple years of its existence. He's, you know, drafted. He's had a pretty steady pattern of how he's drafted, and seems like he has a philosophy that he's trying to adhere to when he's trying to build the back of the bench through draft picks. But really, like, the team, again, like, since Masai's been in town, the team got accidentally good, and he hasn't been able to rework it in his own sort of mold like he did with the Nuggets, for example. And I feel like he's probably going to want to see it out, even, you know, and I'm not sure he's the kind of guy who's going to leave the organization in the lurch in the middle of a, you know, vastly important summer. It just doesn't seem like that kind of guy. And honestly, like, the Knicks, they have options. Like, David Griffin's out there too. David Griffin is a very big name and a very good executive. Like, he could probably fit that job as well, and it wouldn't require giving up draft capital in order to, you know, bring him in, right? Because, like, the Knicks aren't in the spot where they can just give up draft picks to bring people in. Like, they are a team that needs their draft picks, and, like, if you're giving up first round picks to bring in Masai Ujiri, that's setting Masai Ujiri back. That's like what happened when they gave a bunch of stuff to bring in Carmelo Anthony, and then when Melo got there through the trade, like, they were set back because they didn't have enough stuff on the roster. Like, it's kind of similar if you think about it. So yeah, I don't think people should be too scared. I mean, the specter of New York money, I suppose, could play a factor here, but I feel like this is probably just James Dolan being adorable and dreaming, but, like, not really gonna ever translate to anything.
Yeah, I mean, it came from a reputable source, so this isn't just, like, talking about nothing. But
yeah,
like I said, I think that it's just kind of a pipe dream on one side, and you know, for all the points you said, the other side is obviously a lot greener. And you're right, he hasn't really done, you know, a big Masai Ujiri like free agent splash, really. They've, you know, maintained the same core for the most part, brought in some peripheral pieces, like you said. So, you know, he's a tenacious guy. He probably wants to stick around to see a little bit more of his imprint on the team. And, you know, all hats to him. I mean, he's got the keys, and he might not have that to the same extent if he were to go to New York. And New York is so dysfunctional. I think maybe if this came up in 2 years when Porzingis is 23, and maybe they have some younger pieces who have developed a little bit, maybe it's a different story. Maybe he thinks about it a little bit more. But the shape that team is in, you know, there's back and forth reports about Carmelo Anthony wanting a buyout. And if he stays, then probably that makes it a little bit more dysfunctional. It's just a tough time to think about joining that team.
Yeah. Yeah, it's also funny, too. I was, like, just sort of listening or reading stuff today, like, just reading Twitter and things like that. And, like, people seem, I mean, I understand it. Like, Raptors fans love Masai Ujiri. I love Masai Ujiri. And it kind of warmed my heart when all the sort of instant reaction to the Knicks wanting Masai Ujiri kind of came out, and it was just like constant defense of Masai and be like, no, he's ours. At the same time, like, there were people out there saying, like, I don't even think I would give up Masai for Kristaps Porzingis. And, like, I don't know. That seems like a bit of a flawed bit of logic there. Like, I as much as I love Masai and as much as I think he's done amazing for the franchise, and you can argue that he's as inexpendable as, you know, DeMar DeRozan or Kyle Lowry for the franchise, like, I feel like there's a point where you would sort of be like, okay, we can move on here. Like, there's a culture established. I don't think the culture just disintegrates the second he leaves. It might, but I think there's enough here over the last 4 years that even if he were to leave, the Raptors would be reasonably fine as long as they're not hiring some idiot to run everything. And I feel like they would exhaust every resource to try to bring in someone of Masai's caliber to try to take over the helm. So, like, people acting like it'd be the end of the world if Masai were to leave, I think are kind of overreacting a bit. And if, like, yeah, if the Knicks were to be like, here's Kristaps Porzingis for Masai Ujiri, you do that if you're the Raptors. But, like, that's not going to happen because, of course, that's not going to happen. That's just not how these things work. It was just funny that I saw that sentiment out there where people are just so attached to Masai. And, like, I don't want to come off as someone who's not attached to Masai. I think it would suck if he was gone. But the degree to which people were like, no, it's like a deal breaker for anything for Masai to be gone is a little extreme to me.
Yeah, and that's like so theoretical, but I think you're right. The players are players, and at the end of the day, the man behind the machine is not as influential as the players actually playing on the court. There are a lot of good general managers in the league. There are a few dummies, but Masai Ujiri is definitely near the top of the barrel. But I don't think there's that much space as far as influence on wins and losses between a Masai Ujiri and maybe another guy who's maybe in the top 15, top 20. So, yeah, at the end of the day, I think you would do that trade. But again, it's so theoretical.
Oh, that, yeah. It's just not going to happen, people. Just, much like a lot of the propositions put forth in the questions today, it's not going to happen. Before we get to those questions, before we get to the questions, a couple more things to talk about. Houston made the trade for Chris Paul today. It came out of left field, really shocked me. It's pretty amazing. Good on the Clippers for turning that into something. Smart of the Rockets to sort of go this route with Paul as well, where he's only going to opt in for 1 year and, you know, go from there. The Rockets, man, Daryl Morey's pulled two top seven players out of his ass in his time with the Rockets. And, I mean, people talk about how they think it might not work, how those two guys like the ball in their hands. I think they're going to figure it out. They're two of the most talented players in the league. And having two ball handlers isn't going to be the worst thing in the world to be able to sort of play off each other or stagger. People talk as though those two guys would just be on the floor for all 48 minutes at a time. That's just not how it's going to work. And I think it's going to be really nice. I mean, you saw James Harden break down near the end of the year. Or not really break down, I guess kind of slow down and get exhausted. Like, having Chris Paul out there would have helped that. So I think it's going to be really good. But as it relates to Kyle Lowry, this is probably a good thing for the Raptors as well. Because, you know, Lowry, you know, Houston was definitely a Lowry target. Definitely a threat, I think, if they were to be able to offload the salary required to bring in a guy like Lowry. Really, the only other teams out there that really posed a threat, I think, where teams like the Kings and Nets, who have max cap space, and like maybe the Wolves, that they can get off Ricky Rubio, but that seems like it's going to be pretty hard for them. So I feel like it's looking more and more like Lowry's only spot to come back to is going to be Toronto. Are you encouraged by what's happened today with this deal with the Rockets?
Well, yeah, even before the Chris Paul trade, I think that, you know, Michael Grange had a good article the other day about the assumed value of Kyle Lowry in the offseason, and even I was a little bit surprised at how low it's gotten. And, you know, we talk so much about how nobody wants a center anymore, but the market for point guards isn't the same as it used to be because it's so diluted with talent at this point.
Yeah.
So it's not necessarily like a DeMar DeRozan where there's a lack of really talented scoring shooting guards in the league who you can rely on. And there's going to be a lot of suitors if he didn't just take the Raptors and, you know, Knicks every other meeting. Kyle Lowry is going to be a challenge to get up to that kind of $27 million per year range, which I'm a little bit surprised with. Yeah, I mean, if his agent's looking for $30 million a year, I think that market is dried up and he's going to have to go to a losing team to get it. The Raptors probably have the bargaining chips right now to offer a little bit lower of a contract, which is good if they want to bring back some combination of those cheaper guys and Patrick Patterson and PJ Tucker. Yeah, it's good news for the Raptors. I'm still wary of the Wolves and their pitch to Lowry if it comes to that. If they can offload that Rubio contract, like you said, it's going to be a challenge. But again, like I said, you know, a couple months ago with trying to find, you know, offloaders for other contracts in the Raptors, there are still some dummy GMs out there who would take a Rubio just because of his singular talent at passing the ball and, you know, being unselfish in that regard. And that makes me wary because I think that Minnesota has a better sale, especially if, you know, Kyle Lowry is still not 100%, you know, with the team. Maybe he's still thinking about... you know, are still seeing reports going back and forth about, you know, where he's at with his mindset towards the Raptors. If it comes down to those two teams, I think it gets really interesting.
Yeah, for sure. But that, again, it totally hinges on Ricky Rubio being able to, you know, be moved off of those books.
Moved and him taking less money. I think that the Wolves offer him 22, 23, even without Rubio there.
Yeah.
And I think the Raptors could still usurp that offer, and I think they probably would. Zach Lowe's podcast this week, I think he said something like $4,100 would be the offer on the table, and that would probably still be the best offer, again, by a winning team.
Yeah, I feel like that $4,100 feels a little bit low. I think they're, I mean, and Zach Lowe is as plugged in as anybody, so who knows, but like that feels a little bit low for what Lowry is. I'm thinking, though, like, you know, people have been looking at what the Raptors can offer him over 4 years, and that's still more than any other team can offer him over 4 years. And like that's what, like $170 million or something like that. I don't really have the exact figure in front of me, but like, and I've always kind of been under the assumption that it was going to take that 4 year max to outbid any other team if you don't want to give him that fifth year. Whereas right now, like based on what the market is, like you can probably get something done, maybe even around like 4 years, 130 or something like that. Like it's not 4 years, 100. It's not super duper cheap, but it's cheaper than what the max that any other team could offer would be. And I don't know, that might be what it is in this point guard market, because there's so many guys that are out there. Obviously Chris Paul's off the table now, but there's still George Hill, there's still Drew Holiday, still Jeff Teague that people kind of forget about. He seems like the forgotten one here. Like there's a lot of point guards out there, and Lowry just the demand, like it's basic economics, like there's might not be enough demand there for him to make a huge, you know, max level contract. And if that ends up happening, like the Raptors could end up getting a bit of a bargain on this after thinking like, hey, maybe a 5 year max could completely sewer this team in 5 years from now. Like maybe they get a 4 year bargain, which is, it's all shaping up pretty well for the Raptors right now.
Yeah, and I think even the losing teams we mentioned, the Kings, you know, they just drafted a guy they're pretty confident in.
Yeah,
and
two guys. The Nets, they took two point guards.
Yeah, and I mean, the Nets got Russell. And I mean, he's not a true point guard, but I think that with him coming in with a really young, unpolished team, they kind of want to give him the keys, or at least that's what I hope they'll want to do this year.
Yeah.
So it's hard to kind of mesh that with a big free agent signing for close to max in Kyle Lowry. It's hard to, you know, mix those two moves, you know, in my mind. But yeah, I mean, everybody, there are so many teams out there who either have an established point guard or are happy with the young guy they have.
Yeah.
So it's drying up, and you'd also need the combination of max cap space. So yeah, I mean, you're right. It's shaping up pretty well for the Raptors to maybe get a bit of a deal. There can't just be an arbitrary number. I think when they sit down, they have to have some sort of reasoning behind it. Like, you know, if you take this much less money, it'll free us up to bring back, you know, Tucker and Patterson. You know, all these things are on the table, you know, with Lowry taking less money. So,
yeah. I guess people have, I've seen the mention of the Spurs still out there. Like, I don't think the Spurs, like Bruce Arthur reported in that column that blew up last week, that, you know, the Spurs weren't even interested in Kyle Lowry, even if they didn't get Chris Paul. And I still think that probably makes sense because, like, to get Chris Paul, they would have had to completely gut their roster. They would have had no wing depth. They would have, you know, been sitting there with, like, Kawhi Leonard, Chris Paul, and, like, a bunch of minimum guys and rookies. But, like, I'm not sure that if it's a question if you're going to do it for Chris Paul, they're definitely not going to do it for Kyle Lowry is my point. Like, I don't really see them seeing the value and completely blowing everything up for Kyle Lowry. And that's not a knock against Kyle Lowry. He's just not Chris freaking Paul. So I think the Spurs are probably off the table too. Maybe they decide to get creative and maybe they want to get desperate. But like the way the West is shaping up with what the Rockets are and what the Wolves might be, I'm not sure it's really worth blowing everything up to get Kyle Lowry to play with Kawhi Leonard. I'm not sure that team is any better than either of those teams I just mentioned.
Yeah, and the news tonight is that they didn't have any interest in Chris Paul because they're confident in Tony Parker's return. So I don't really know where the Spurs are at this point, but to your point, I think that if they're not interested in Chris Paul, they're not going to be interested in Kyle Lowry. And I think they're big... question mark this offseason is what are they going to do with Aldridge, and they probably, you know, are more concerned with that at this point.
Remember when it was like really exciting that the Raptors got a meeting with LaMarcus Aldridge?
Bullet dodged.
I think that's it for stuff we got to talk about, I suppose. I mean, there's award stuff, I suppose. The Raptors didn't really figure in. Kyle Lowry got 8th in teammate of the year voting, which seems weird to me because he doesn't seem like the easiest guy to play with, considering his demeanor, but that's cool, I suppose. DeMar DeRozan got a 5th place vote, and for some reason it inspired a bunch of people to start slandering DeMar DeRozan because he got one out of a possible 500 votes on the ballot. Was he one of the top 5 players in the NBA this year? No. Was he one of the top 10 players? Probably not. But like, he was really good, and I can see if one guy... I think there was a guy from Washington that put him on there. Yeah. I mean, it's not the right vote, but who cares?
Yeah, and ironically, I mean, John Wall got a bunch of third place votes, which is hilarious to me. Yeah. Or he got one third place vote. That's more funny to me.
Yeah, I just like, if you're really going to stress about fifth place MVP votes and like use that as an opportunity to like tweet a chart of how much worse DeRozan was than the other guys on the MVP ballot, like, what are you doing, man? Who cares? It's one vote out of a possible 500. So just leave it. And we'll leave that. We can get to questions now if you want, because we're going to cover a whole bunch of stuff in here. Sound good?
Yeah, sure. Have you seen anything on Ibaka? Any possible suitors there?
Not really, no. It's been kind of quiet with Ibaka rumors, right? Like, unless something came out tonight, which I haven't seen.
No.
But, yeah.
Where are you at with that? And I've looked at the numbers, and I don't see any way where they're going to try to bring him back? Or do you think that they try to go up and over the tax or get him to take some sort of discount?
For Ibaka?
I really don't know what the assumed offer would be for him. Would it be around 20?
I think it's going to be contingent on if Lowry's back. Like, I don't see the point in bringing an aging Ibaka back if you don't have Lowry. But I do think, like, if Lowry's back, I think they definitely want to bring him back. Like, there's always been the rumors of, like, the wink-wink, nudge-nudge deal with them. And maybe, yeah, I think 20 is probably the range. I did a podcast today, actually, with Joe Wolf on from The Score, where we talked about what we think the contracts are going to be for these guys. And, like, first of all, we couldn't find any real suitors for Ibaka. Like, he feels like a plan B for a lot of teams, maybe, but really there's not an easy fit anywhere. And with the Raptors, like, I think I put, like, 3 years, $63 million with, like, a fourth-year option, maybe, like a player option. I don't know. That sounds kind of in the ballpark for me. Maybe it's a little bit less if you can give him. Maybe if you give him 4 years, you can get him for like 17 or 18. It's so hard to tell because we don't know how much the market is going to correct after last summer, where everything was crazy.
Yeah. There'll be that first kind of wave of offers that we saw last year with the Mozgov deal and the Noah deal last summer too.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Biombo, Jan Mahimi.
That was all in the first 2 or 3 days. Yeah, so, yeah, bad. I think there'll be some sort of correction. You know, the cap's lower than it was expected to be. A lot of these position needs are being drafted or being acquired by trade. So yeah, it'll be interesting. I think it'll be a little bit cooler than last year, but it's been a pretty crazy off season just this week, so
yeah,
it could continue that way.
Yeah, I'm really curious to see like what the first deal is going to be that like sets the market. Like Patrick Patterson seems like an interesting guy to me in terms of setting the market, because like he's a very useful player. Last year he might have gotten like $18 million a year. Like he's more effective than Jan Mahimi or Bismack Biyombo or Timo Mozgov. Like, and he's better than all those centers that got shitty deals last summer. So like maybe he would have been looking at like $19 to $20 million a year. This year I think it's going to be way less than that. He picked the wrong time to be a free agent. Obviously he didn't pick it, but that's something that he's going to probably get hit with this summer, and like maybe he gets 12. Like that's kind of the high end I think for Patterson right now. But there's lots of questions about Patterson actually, so why don't we get to them right now?
Okay.
All right, first one here about Patterson from at 416 basketball. It would seem the Raptors need to re-sign Patterson. How much money would it take to keep him? I have been in the camp where I think I'd rather have Patterson back than Tucker. Just because I like his big man skill set like a little bit more. He can pass, and people always cringe when he puts the ball on the floor, but he got a lot better at that at the second half of this season. His three-point shot is sort of, you know, confusing and perplexing and doesn't always hit the basket, but like overall over the course of the season he's always going to come back to 36 or 37% anyway. Maybe he's streaky here and there, but I think he's a useful player. And before he got hurt and before the Raptors made the trades, he was like the third most important player on the Raptors, and the Raptors absolutely shat the bed in January when he was hurt. So I think it's important to try to bring him back if you can. I'm not sure it's even going to happen because of what happened at the end of the year where he didn't show up to locker cleanout day, and maybe they're just ready to move on from him. Maybe he's ready to move on from the Raptors. But what do you think is going to be the number that keeps him in Toronto? And I don't know, do you think the Raptors are in need to bring him back?
Yeah, it's tough. I would obviously like to bring all four back because I think they're important in their own way at four free agents. But obviously that's not going to happen.
The only way that happens is if you can deal both Carroll and Valanciunas, I think.
Yeah, and that's, yeah. I mean, they tried to move Valanciunas on the draft, and that probably was the best time to do it.
I disagree. I think the best time to trade either of those guys is after free agency kind of settles, and you can see what teams have cap space left.
Or any need for, you know, a lumbering center.
Yeah.
For me, I think that was the best time just because you were packaging it with the pick, but it just probably wasn't a good enough pick to, you know, get anybody on the scent.
Right.
But as far as Patterson goes, I think, you know, we talked just a minute ago, 12, 13 million is probably, you know, what the Raptors are comfortable offering, but I'm curious to see if he's not one of those guys who doesn't want to wait for, you know, the more important free agents to see what happens.
Yeah.
If he gets a bigger offer from another team, I think he's probably going to take it. And out of, you know, him and Tucker, I think that's probably going to happen a little bit faster for him. Although Tucker, you know, got a lot of buzz as a defensive player from all over the NBA, you know, for his playoff performances. So it's tough with those two because you don't know if they're going to wait. And I think the Raptors need to wait to sign those guys until they figure out what's happening with Lowry and maybe Ibaka too. Ibaka Patterson at their new contracts might be redundant and too much money into one position.
Yeah.
So there's so many things to consider with Patterson. And to Jordan's point, I don't think that there's necessarily a need to re-sign him. I think you have more, pressing decisions to be made. And he might not be there when, you know, your decision time comes to it.
Yeah, the Timberwolves are a team that I like for him a lot, as like a four next to Towns, next to Wiggins and Butler. Like, I think that would fit in really nicely. And if they can't get a point guard, if they think they're out of the running or they can't deal Rubio, like, he might be one of those kind of guys that you can fit in if they have $19 million in cap space. Bring in a Patterson and also someone else to try to augment the roster. I think that kind of makes sense for them because they have their three stars in place, and, you know, depth would be really nice for them. Obviously, if they can get Kyle Lowry, that'd be fantastic for them, but, like, depth could be pretty useful for them too if they don't go after a point guard and they're happy with Rubio. So
I think they like Jang and they're paying him a lot of money. So
yeah. I mean, if they're trying to offload salary too, he could be a potential casualty from that too. They're a weird team where they just have nothing on the bench at all. I think there's another guy from the Wolves that's going to come up in a question later too, so we can save that, I suppose. But yeah, like, I'd like to bring back one of Patterson or Tucker because you're opening yourself up to issues at the four again if you don't bring either of them back. But yeah, it's a real shame that we never got to see Patterson and Ibaka play together more often. Like, they did a little bit, but it wasn't really something that Dwayne Casey went to all that often. Whether through just, you know, having to match up rotations, you know, being a little shorthanded, or just, I don't really know why it didn't happen all that much, but like, I wish we had seen that more, because that was the thing I was happiest about when we got Ibaka, was seeing him play with Patterson in the front court. So I would still, it's weird. I think Patterson's a more useful and effective player than Tucker, but I think Tucker has a chance to make more money, which is kind of weird. I wouldn't pay Tucker more money than Patterson, but I think that could happen based on recency bias. So I guess we can see. Next question. We kind of touched on this, William Blythe with Lowry. Now the best point guard available, do you see his price getting driven up? I don't really think so, because, again, there's just not a big market out there, and that's just one fewer team that needs a point guard, so I don't think it's going to get driven up at all. Agree?
Yeah, I think we kind of covered this one. He's suffering from a lack of suitors and a lack of need on a lot of teams.
Next question from Sahal Abdi. Who should the Raptors be targeting as a main? Who should the Raptors' main target be at power forward? Ibaka, Millsap, or should Masai form a large package for Blake? First of all, you can't form a package for Blake because he's a free agent, so that's not in the cards. And sign and trades. Let's just get this out there. I did an entire episode yesterday, essentially like 10 minutes of yesterday's podcast, talking about sign and trades. Sign and trades aren't a thing after 2011. It's just there's no incentive for teams or players to do them. Teams, if they're trying to sign and trade a guy, or if they're trying to, you know, bring a guy in, they stand a much better advantage to just trade the guys they have on their roster for other assets to open up the cap space to bring in a guy on a sign and trade. And then on the player's side, they can't make the 5 years and the max from their, like, the bird rights contract they can't get if they're being signed and traded. So that's not a thing that happens anymore. We haven't seen a sign and trade in a long time. The Chris Paul thing isn't really a sign and trade. He just opted into his contract for next year and was traded and on this sort of on the condition that he opted in. That wasn't a sign and trade either. So those aren't a thing. So Blake Griffin's probably not going to come to the Raptors. Paul Millsap, the Raptors aren't going to have the money to get him. He's, again, the sign and trade won't work there. It's just the Raptors would be better off served trading some stuff to get assets back for it than just giving a bunch of stuff to Millsap or to Atlanta to get Millsap when they can otherwise get him for free if they were to offload assets. So that's not going to happen. And Ibaka, obviously, I think is the number one target. Like, he's already on the roster. You have his bird rights. That's why you traded for him. And I'm sorry I'm eating up the entire question, John, but questions like this bug me.
I think you about covered it.
Yeah. Ibaka number one. Like, if for some reason there's a bunch of cap space that gets opened up, you know, and the only way the Raptors get a bunch of cap space, and the most they can get to is like 19, is if all four free agents walk. And that's still not going to be enough to sign either Millsap or Blake Griffin. So don't worry about that. Next question, opinions on the idea of Blake Griffin coming to Toronto. I think I pretty much just covered that. It's not going to happen. It's lovely. He would be great as a four for this team next to Serge Ibaka. I think that would be killer. It's not going to happen. So...
yeah, you just it's so hard to make the money work.
Yeah. And it sounds like
any sort of trade scenario.
Yeah.
And yeah,
it sounds like tough. Chris Paul leaving the Clippers opens it up for Griffin to stay with the Clippers. And it sounds like the Clippers might offer him a 5-year deal. I think Zach Lowe said that in his piece today, that they might just go 5 years with him even though he's got the health issues. So that could actually have like weird ramifications for the Raptors in the Eastern Conference, because if Blake Griffin's off the board, there's only one guy really for Miami and Boston to duke it out for in free agency, and that's Gordon Hayward. And if Hayward doesn't go to Boston, that there goes the plan for Boston to get Paul George and Gordon Hayward, and there goes, you know, kind of the summer where it's the opportunity for Boston to make all these moves to try to get stars in before they get super expensive. So that's something that's good, I suppose, about all this. If Blake Griffin stays, that could have some tangential effects for the Raptors that are nice.
Yeah, I think Hayward's going to Boston. I think that how can that not be a done deal at this point? You know, they're saving all these moves to have the cap space. You know, they're not making any split decisions because they're confident they can get a free agent. Who else would that free agent be? I feel like
it depends entirely on George Hill, I think. Like, I think if the Jazz keep George Hill, the Jazz are a better team than what Boston is right now. So I feel like Hayward going back to the Jazz makes some sense for him. And he obviously can make more money there. Although, I think today on True Hoop, they're talking about how if Hayward wants to just get a 3-year deal, which he might, considering he's only like 27 and can get like a supermax after 10 years of service in 3 years, that might be attractive to him, because he can, he'll only miss out on like $3 million if he signs a 3-year deal with some other team, as opposed to signing a 3-year deal with the Jazz. And yeah, if he can do that, maybe that gets him to Boston. I'm not quite sure, but I don't like predicting free agency, because weird shit happens all the time. The Heat like to do stuff. I don't know. Hayward on the Heat would be kind of fun, actually, with like Dragic. That'd be entertaining. Maybe I'm just projecting my distaste for the Celtics and hoping that they don't get him. But I don't know. If he does go there, again, this is all back to Blake Griffin. Like, even if Hayward does go there, there's no guarantee they can get Paul George. If they do, well, fuck. They'll be really goddamn good. Next question from OG Better at T.Finest97. Which young player do you think will still be a core piece 3 to 4 years from now? Players is in parentheses. That's an interesting one. Like, I'm going to do something about this for Raptors HQ. I'm going to try to rank the 8 guys the Raptors have on rookie deals right now. Norm is interesting, because after this season, he can get paid, and I feel like there's a potential for him to make like Allen Crabbe money. And in that case, I'm not sure the Raptors would want to keep him. Like, I guess it depends on what he does this year. If he proves that he's going to be a core member long term, then yeah, I guess you match anything that comes in for him. But that's an interesting one. I think Poeltl for sure. I think OG for sure, and probably DeLon Wright will be around. I'm not sure like core piece, you know, one of your best players, it really applies to any of those guys except for maybe OG. But yeah, it's hard to say. Like, I think what the Raptors are doing right now is really smart, building up the back of the roster, and I think it opens you up for a lot of trades. It gives you flexibility. If guys get expensive at some point, you just kind of keep the pipeline going. So it's hard to say 3 to 4 years from now how many of these guys are going to be on the roster.
Yeah, I like Siakam too, especially if he's working on a jump shot, which apparently he is.
I always forget about Siakam. I don't know why. He's fun.
He is fun, and I think that, you know, if he develops quickly, he could be an option as that backup power forward this year. So I like him and all the guys he mentioned, obviously. I think definitely Wright and Powell are ready to go rotation pieces at this point. I think that this is the year, though, where they have to either, you know, use Powell or get off the pot. He didn't play enough last year, I think, to his talent level. And that's mostly because they were still cycling in minutes for the mostly, you know, disappointing Carroll and, the other guys. So I would like to see, you know, ideally you see Carroll offloaded and you get more minutes for Powell that way. But I'd like to see him in a bigger role this year.
I still think even if Carroll's on the roster, he's going to play a bunch this year. Like, I think they'll try. Yeah. I think they might start him and just move Carroll to the bench.
Yeah, they're going to if he's here.
Yeah, because, like, he was always better as the fifth starter anyway. I think he's proven he can play the three in most situations. I mean, there will be some matchups where it's tough, but I think he can probably do that. And, like, his numbers when he was a fifth starter were just fantastic, so I think that's probably the best use for him. Like, I don't love him having to create offense in the second unit in a Terrence Ross role. I don't think he can really do it right now. He doesn't really pass. He has no finishing ability, really. Not a great pull-up shooter or anything like that. So I think he's probably best in a Wes Matthews-type role. It's the comp I keep coming back to for him. But, man, I think it's very apt for him. I guess we'll see. This year is going to be big for him and whether or not the Raptors want to end up paying him, because he's going to get paid next summer, regardless of whether it's the Raptors trying to keep him in-house or the Raptors offering it, matching an offer sheet, or another team blowing the roof off the doors, the door off the roofs. I don't know. What
the ceiling is the roof.
The ceiling is the roof. I don't know what the phrase is. I have no idea what the phrase is, but if some other team comes out there too, like, he's going to get paid regardless is my point. Next question from Blair Agnew at Go Raps. Very simple. How'd you get that handle? That's pretty good. Who is going to be the Raps most improved player this year? I'll go to you first, because I've been hawking all these answers.
Oh no, I haven't looked at any answers. Raps most improved player. Well, it's got to be one of the young guys, right? It's not going to be JV.
Could be Carroll.
Oh yeah, I don't know. I think he's broken forever. Yeah, I'll say DeLon Wright.
That's a good call.
Yeah.
He's good. He's very good.
He is good. I think that especially if they, feel like it's time to get out of Corey Joseph's contract, move that for something. He's ready, I feel like, for that next, the backup point guard position. And again, all this stuff is in flux depending on what they decide to do with Kyle Lowry.
Yeah, for sure. I think Jakob Poeltl has a chance to be pretty good next year too. When he was in college, he really flashed as like a good pick and roll scorer, like a really good rim runner, could get up for lobs. Like he's shown he can dunk. I'm hoping that he kind of strengthens up a little bit and becomes a better offensive player this year because his defense is so damn good at such a young age. And if he continues to progress there, like I think he could be really useful next year and potentially, I don't know. Do you think he could be a starter one day? I think he could definitely be a starter one day. Like a really like nice low usage center starter, but like I think he's got that in him, and especially if JV's not around anymore or Ibaka or whoever, like, there could be an opportunity for him to succeed. So I'll go
Yeah.
with Jakob Poeltl. I'm high on
I mean,
Jakob
Zaza Pachulia just won a championship, so
Poeltl.
low usage is the two sexiest words when it comes to centers these days.
Next question here from Josh at Wobbles JR. If JV gets traded, who do you think we can use the added cap money on? I'm assuming we don't bring much money back, and what can we get for him? You're not using the added cap money on him because you're not getting added cap money. You're just getting out of the tax in all likelihood if you're trading JV. So you're not getting anything with him. You're increasing your mid-level exception from being a taxpayer mid-level, which is about 5 million, to a non-taxpayer mid-level, which is about 8 million. So that's good, but other than that, you're not really getting much in terms of extra cap room to work with if you trade JV and bring back the guys you want to bring back. What do you think you can get for Jonas?
I honestly, I don't know. Like it's the same thing with Lowry and trying to find a suitable team. It's just there's no market for a player like Jonas Valanciunas, it seems like these days, especially considering the times we live in with the Golden State Warriors and the show they put on with the Cavs. Even if he is an effective player and he's an effective player for his position, but I just think that he's not in fashion right now, and that's going to affect his market pretty severely in any sort of conversations they have with other teams. I just don't think that anybody really wants a center who you throw the ball down to and demands touches.
Yeah, I'm with you. And I had this argument with Will Lue last week for 25 minutes. He thinks you can get something for him. I don't really think you can. I think if you're getting something back for him, like the return definitely involves some sort of shitty center, because think of all the trades over the last year that have involved centers. They've all
All of them?
required, what's that?
Pretty much all of them?
Yeah, all them centers. No. Yeah, if you look back over the last year, every single set like trade that's involved a center has it also involved another center coming back the other way. It's just kind of how it works. You got Miles Plumlee for Roy Hibbert, you get Brook Lopez for Timo Mozgov, you get Jonas Valanciunas for some shitty center. That's just kind of how it works. Yeah, I'm not really sure there's going to be much in the way of anything interesting coming back for Jonas, except for maybe cap relief and maybe like some picks. I don't know. I don't even know what picks would be. Like, who would want to give up picks for Jonas at this point? Maybe second rounders, not first rounders.
I thought maybe the market would be a little bit more for him after what's his face from Portland came in and played really well in their first round series
Oh,
when he
Nurkic.
was on the court. But I don't know. I think that's so far in history now that that's fallen off people's radars.
Well, here's the thing is Yusuf Nurkic can pass.
Yeah.
Which Jonas cannot do. He's got a. I mean, I honestly think that he's more of a positive asset for the Raptors than he is in trade. Like,
Yeah.
you can use him, even if you're not starting him. Maybe they go away from starting him next year, pull him off the bench. You can just eat minutes, give him more touches, give him the touches that everyone has been begging for him to get for however long, for whatever fucking reason. And yeah, just pound the ball inside like it's 1996 and get him some secondary unit scoring, I suppose. I don't know. But like in a trade, I don't think you're
Again,
getting
it's
much.
not. If other teams, are going at him as second unit players, he's obviously better off. I think it's just the biggest problem with him is defense. Every team knows not to go at him, and when starters do that, they tend to have success. So I think I said that in my player review for the guy. I think that the best case scenario for him with the Raptors is if they put him in some sort of reserve first guy off the bench role.
Yeah, and like if he was to be in that role, it wouldn't be quite as extreme a terrible situation as it was in that Cavs game where he scored 23 points in like 20 minutes but gave up just endless threes at the other end on defense. Like, it wouldn't be that extreme because no team, not every team is the Cavs, so you could probably get away with it. But, you know, in a playoff situation, that's kind of what Jonas's destiny is to be a guy who gets run off the floor against very good teams. And that's just kind of the reality. Next question here. Halifaxian KD, yeah, Raps fan 1237. Halifaxian KD, you are one of the best listeners and sort of supporters of both the podcasts here with Raptors HQ and with Locked On Raptors. What the hell's with the Twitter handle, man? You can fix it. You don't need 1237. You could fix it. I'm just saying that now. I love you. You're a great supporter of everything I do, but come on. Is CJ Miles the perfect ultimate realistic target for the Raptors? Who gets more money, him or Tupat? What do you think?
In general,
What do you mean? Like,
as in like what the market is for him or what the team would offer him? Because again, there's
yeah.
too many question marks here to really think that they'd make an offer to CJ Miles as a free agent because they don't have his bird rights. They'd need cap room, and like we've already talked about, the requirement for cap room is pretty difficult for this team if they bring back basically anybody, especially one of those top two guys. So,
Yeah,
I think
Miles, I
cash
think.
is more important for the team anyway.
Yeah, Miles, I think you'd be hoping you could get with a mid-level exception. Although, if you have the taxpayer mid-level, you're not getting it with $5 million a year. If you have $8 million, like maybe that's enough for Miles. But I still think like his shooting is going to come at a premium, and I think some team will probably pay him more than that. Like,
Oh, God, yeah.
yeah. So, yeah, maybe you could get lucky, but I don't think you will. It totally depends on how much the market corrects this year, I think. Like, we'll see pretty early on what the market's going to be for these guys and how much teams are scared off by the dumb shit they did last year. So I guess we'll see. But Miles would be nice. 3-point shooting is good, and he could take some end of the clock shots.
Yeah, I think that, you know, how many teams have you heard this year say that they need shooting?
Yeah.
Like, it's going to be crazy with guys like that.
Yeah. He kind of profiles as one of the guys who will be a beneficiary of the market, I think. Next one from Private at Private Zero. Thoughts on the following acquisitions: Gallinari, Wilson Chandler, Shabazz Muhammad, Paul Millsap, Kelly Olynyk. We talked about Millsap. Gallinari is going to be too expensive, I think. Wilson Chandler would have to come through trade, and I don't know. We've kind of gone down that road a little bit before. Wilson Chandler is interesting, but he costs a lot of money and he's kind of old, so I'm not a huge guy on that. What about Shabazz Muhammad?
That's interesting because the Wolves probably want to get out from under him as a, you know, an alternative if they can't get out from under Rubio.
Yeah, to waive his cap hold would be pretty nice, I think. I think it's like $8 million or something like that.
Yeah, he's a nice player. I don't think he shoots well enough to, you know, have the desired impact that you'd want with the Raptors because you'd want shooters coming off the bench. But he's a nice player. I think he's, you know, he would be a good fill out the roster guy as an ex as a mid-level exception as opposed to playing one of the young guys at the back of the roster. I'd prefer that, and I don't think he really takes away from anything the Raptors want to do. Everybody who, you know, I've seen who writes about for the Timberwolves loves the guy, especially in the role he's in there. And I don't think that would change that much with the Raptors. You know, he's a drive first big guard who occasionally can step out and shoot, and he'd be a decent creator.
Yeah, I'm just not sure he's very good. And he's
No,
definitely
he's
like
definitely not
his
good enough
yeah,
to be like a starter or anything.
the start he had to his second season before he got hurt was really nice. Like, he played 38 games, he averaged 13.5 points, shot 40% from three almost. Like, that was really nice, but it was 38 games. Since then, he's been a pretty bad shooter, and kind of just he feels like empty calories almost. But yeah, I don't know. I don't love Shabazz Muhammad, I think, as much as maybe you do from the sounds of it, so I would kind of probably pass on that. Kelly Olynyk, though. What about him?
No.
No?
No.
Yeah. I mean, if you can get him for $8 million in the mid-level, if you have the
He's
non.
gonna make more money than I'm just gonna fully.
Yeah, I think so. You're breaking up
No.
a little bit, by the way. But. No, this is a bad Verizon commercial. Can't hear you now. No. Well, I might hang up and call you back and keep recording because I don't want to edit this, but I'll hang up and call you back. Sorry about that, folks. We'll I think it's Skype being a dumbass. I'm not sure, but we'll see. Either way, yeah, Kelly Olynyk, I think he's going to make more than $8 million probably. So don't, I wouldn't expect that to be a guy the Raptors are after. He'd be nice though. I think as like a third big, like there are worse guys to have, I suppose. But he's kind of unsexy. Like a lot of these potential moves are. John's back now. Okay, let's move on here. We've got a couple more questions. This one from Darthleen at underscore Darthleen underscore. How scared are you guys about Masai Ujiri and the Knicks, if at all? I think we did cover this already. Not at all, really, for me. You?
We did, although I've been skimming the Bruce Arthur article that just came out while we've been recording this, and it's a little bit more dire than what we would have thought of this morning.
Do tell.
But again, I don't know if we could trust this guy. I know a lot of people have like thrown him off the bus, but I happen to trust, you know, his reports that he says. The article basically sums up that Masai Ujiri has carte blanche to leave if he wants to leave, and that he is considering the New York offer. But a phone call hasn't been made from the New York side of things, that it's just a desire they've expressed. And the other tidbit from the article is that he did get an offer from Brooklyn last year and he did think about it. So I guess the working assumption in the Raptors organization is that he, you know, has the ability to leave if he wants to leave, that he has thought about it. And, you know, Arthur's a little bit more dire than I think the reality is. He gets into the details of, you know, what the franchise is staring at by paying a 31-year-old close to max money, which obviously is not the extent of what the Raptors' situation is. But I guess it's a little bit more dire, and you have to trust what, you know, Bruce Arthur's reporting. But it's complicated. He contextualizes it in a very sad article, and the news itself is not actually that sad. I think that, you know, you'd be human to take phone calls about job offers, right?
Yeah, I think anybody would. The matter, yeah, if he has carte blanche to leave, that's one thing. If he is actually considering leaving, that's totally, yeah, it's, ugh, I don't want to think about this, man. This offseason already has enough depressing potential.
Folks should read the article. I don't think, I haven't had enough time to really get this a sense of it, but yeah. It's out there if you're listening to this and you haven't seen it already.
Yeah, so do read that. Next, let's just move on here. Next question. Oh, another depressing one. Lovely. From Sexy Blogger Pick at M. Chance. It's Chance. I screwed that up when I had Matt on my podcast. It's Matt Chance. Chance. Motherfuck. I think I just had a stroke there. Matt Schontz, sexy yeah. Blogger pick. He screwed me up by making his name sexy blogger pick. Assume Lowry, Tupat, Ibaka, and Tucker walk. It's doomsday. What do you do with DeRozan, the most loyal of the Raptors? Yeah, it's hard. He's not an easy guy to trade. That's the thing with him, yeah, right? Yeah.
Start making calls, I guess. Yeah. I mean, you have to see what the market is for, but I think at that point you would try to get, you know, picks and pieces for him, because you know, if you can get a package for him that you're happy with, I think you can go the route of, you know, of just kind of moving your big name, and you've got a lot of talent at the back end of the roster that you really haven't had a chance to prove at the full, you know, league level. So that would be interesting, and I think at that point you just start making calls. The loyalty isn't really much of a question.
Yeah, and I feel like DeRozan probably wouldn't want to be part of another shit team. Here's the thing, is DeRozan makes you good enough that you can maybe make the playoffs if you have him and, like, a bunch of dudes. Although, if you don't have Ibaka, like, it becomes tougher. You probably win, like, 35 games with DeRozan. And, like, I don't know, the East is going to be really bad next year, so maybe you squeak in with 35 wins. But, like, what the hell's the point of that if you're just going to get crushed in round one anyway? If all four of those guys leave, I think definitely look at trading DeRozan. Even if you bring back Ibaka or somebody, I don't really see the point in that. But if the Raptors were like, okay, let's try to see what works here with Ibaka and DeRozan, and see what happens, and they keep Ibaka just to keep the asset, like, I don't know. I still think that team's probably like a 40-45 win team at most, and I think that's worth breaking up at that point. So I think with DeRozan, maybe it doesn't happen right away because he feels like a pretty hard guy to trade. Especially once, like, free agency's gone, like, the draft has passed, free agency's coming, teams are going to have a bunch of money locked up, And, like, I think there would be some teams out there who would want a guy like DeRozan, like Denver, for example. They've been after a star forever. He might fit in pretty nicely with them, actually. So maybe you can make a deal there at some point, but I'm not sure it happens this season. Like, the rebuild might take a little bit of time. But, yeah, I'm not sure it happens right away, but I would definitely look at it. Next question from Jorge Jarbajosa. Shouldn't have had two beers before the podcast. Which player slash asset do you think is being treated as the most overvalued by Messiah management? Who would you like to see moved as the best sell high? I don't know. Is anyone being overvalued?
DeRozan, probably. I mean, that would be the best sell high move.
Yeah, I suppose,
The best time to move him would be now.
That's true, I suppose. It's weird. I still think DeRozan has room to improve left. And, like, we've said this every year, and, like, there's been some doubt, but, like, every year he's gotten better. So maybe he gets to another level where you can even sell him for more at some point next year or next summer. So I don't know. I don't know if he's overvalued by the team. He seems to be properly valued by the team to me. Like, he's got a pretty big contract, which would make any deal pretty hard to make. So I don't know. I think he's properly valued. Maybe...
I think the best thing about the Raptors is nobody's really overvalued.
Yeah, that's the thing.
Everybody's on a pretty good contract.
Yeah, like even Carroll's contract isn't an albatross, right? Like, it's not great, but it's not the worst contract in the world.
No.
Maybe Jonas Valanciunas? I don't know. Like, if... there's no one really that's overvalued by the team, I don't think. And you're not really selling any of these guys high. That's kind of the nature of this team, is that no one has a ton of trade value, which is kind of a bummer, but that's kind of the reality you live in when you're an older team that's pretty good. So
yeah, I think that if anybody has the ability to be sold high right now, I think it's probably DeRozan. Coming off the fifth place vote in MVP voting, it's never gonna get better.
11th overall in MVP voting. You can never take that away from him now. It's wonderful. Next question from Frank Iacobucci. I would really like to see Tucker back. Assuming Lowry and Ibaka are signed, but not Patterson, what are the odds Tucker comes back? I think that's entirely contingent on Damari Carroll getting moved, because I don't think they would go over the tax. And they're probably already over the tax. What the fuck is wrong with me?
They would be with those two.
Yeah, exactly.
And everybody staying, yeah.
Yeah, so you'd have to get rid of Carroll. I think the odds are pretty low, to be honest. I think there's going to be a lot of teams that liked PJ Tucker, and he might fit into that mid-level exception range of $8 million, where he might be a perfect sort of solution for a lot of teams. I've already, today on the podcast I did with Joe Wolfond, we both advocated for him to go to the Grizzlies to replace Tony Allen, and that would be just a perfect marriage, I think.
Oh, God. That would be just a frightening team. Not like a good team, just frightening.
Yeah. Next question here from last question at Real Masai Ujiri. Just a question mark with a trade machine deal. Here's the deal: to the Raptors, the three-way deal. To the Raptors, Danny Green and Trevor Booker. To the Spurs, Valanciunas and Justin Hamilton. Jordan Hamilton, Justin Hamilton, Jamal Hamilton. I don't know what this Hamilton. It's Justin, right?
The one. Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. Jamiroquai Hamilton. Brooklyn gets LaMarcus Aldridge and Bruno.
What?
Yeah. This seems like loss for the Spurs, getting Valanciunas and Hamilton.
Yeah.
I mean, the Nets get Aldridge. That's not great. But they also get Bruno, which is fantastic.
I think the Spurs like Gasol enough to where they probably think he's better than Valanciunas, even at his age.
Yeah. The Raptors win this deal by a pretty significant landslide, I think. So I don't think this is something that would happen.
Yeah, I think that, yeah, the Spurs have to be getting something, and I don't think they like Valanciunas, so.
Yeah. Yeah, that's it for questions, man. We went a while here with these questions, and a lot of them are repetitive, but we got through it. You ready to wrap things up, get to the other side, and do the episode sponsor?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, man, we'll be back in just a second here for the first ever edition of That Random Raptors Game, where I'm going to answer. It's going to go really poorly. All right, talk to you in a second.
All right. right, we're back with the headquarters here with Sean Woodley. We're turning things around for this, the last segment, the first ever Random Raptors game. That Random Raptors game?
Yeah, that Random Raptors game is what I normally
go with. I don't want to step on your toes here and get your segment wrong. Yeah. That Random Raptors game where Sean has to, well, we have to get to the episode sponsor. We're doing that first. Obviously, I'm not the host. Today's episode
sponsor...
Wow,
you are just shitting all over this segment right now. We should probably restart it. Want to just restart?
No, well, now we have to.
Yeah, no, I'm going to keep this in, but just start fresh and go from the beginning again.
Okay. Welcome back to the headquarters here with Sean Woodley. Today's episode sponsor. We've gotten to so many questions, and we're going to get to our
answer. Oh, now your internet's breaking out again. God damn it. All right.
Okay, I restarted. I think it should be okay.
Okay. So yeah, listen, we've got John back now. So go with your third attempt at starting the segment, please, John. It's just breaking out again. You're cracking again.
Hello?
Hi.
I'm trying to close some windows. Maybe that'll help.
Oh, that's probably, it's usually a good help. I think it's the Basketball Reference thing, man. It fucks up Wi-Fi.
That's weird.
There's so much shit on that site. It's enormous. At least that's my excuse. You sound good right now. So let's give you the fourth try to,
Okay.
And I'm not editing any of this. I might cut it down a little bit to streamline the blank parts, but I'm keeping this all in.
Okay, cool. Okay, this is the headquarters. Yeah, Sean Woodley's hosting, but not anymore. I'm hosting. We're going to do this episode sponsor really quickly so that my internet doesn't cut out. And then we have to end it before I get my chance to actually host this that random Raptors game. Today's episode sponsor is Chris Humphreys.
Woo!
Yay! Chris Humphreys had stats for the Raptors. I don't have that screen open anymore. I remember him dunking in the postseason on a breakaway dunk during a fully disappointing series against the Nets. Yes.
My best memory of him is that he was, in fact, traded for Rafael Arujo, which is incredible. Like, how on earth do you, like, it must feel like shit to be the return for Rafael Arujo.
He was way better, too.
Yeah, he was, like, significantly better. That was a coup for the Raptors. Was that Rob Babcock's move? No. I think that was Colangelo. Babcock would have passed on his boy Hoffa that quickly.
Yeah, you're just, you're all about Babcock today for some reason.
Yeah. This is how confident I was feeling about the Masai thing until you read that whole Bruce Arthur thing to me. That's how confident I was feeling about the lack of chance that Masai would go to the Knicks, that I was pulling out Rob Babcock jokes because I wasn't feeling at all under pressure. I also made the pledge that I would change my online writing name to something of the internet's choosing if Masai goes to the Knicks, which could be bad.
Ooh, yeah. Okay, now this is way more interesting than what we're about to play. definitely tweet at Sean with some really good suggestions that could actually happen.
I mean, here's the thing. I might have found a loophole because SB Nation only allows you to change your name once, and I've already done it because I started off with like an underscore in my name, and I changed it just to be Sean Woodley. So I might not be able to do this, actually. So that's
your actual like writing name on the site.
Yeah.
But like your Twitter name.
I can change my Twitter name. That's fine.
Okay.
Yeah.
Anyways, we're going to play that random Raptors game. This is the game that I always lose at, that we're now flipping on its head so that I can host and that Sean can actually get some correct answers into an episode for once. what we do is we pick an old Raptors game with the player in question here, who is Chris Humphreys, and Sean has to try to guess the entire Raptors roster. So we're going with November 16, 2008.
Okay.
Toronto Raptors 107, Miami Heat 96. It was a 1 p.m. game at the Air Canada Center. So a nice nooner for the Raptors. It was probably on CBC. Sorry, go ahead.
Well, no, I was just laughing. What was Chris Humphreys' line?
Chris Humphreys had 14 points. This was his best night of the season. He had 9 rebounds, almost the double-double. 5 for 6 from the field in 16 minutes coming off the bench.
Awesome. Good stuff, yeah. Chris Humphreys. Much better. That's better than any game Hoffa ever put together, I'm pretty sure.
Pretty sure. So 9 players played in this game for the Raptors. You have to name all of them.
Chris Bosh.
Yep.
What was his line? You have to read the line.
Okay, 27 points, 7 for 15 shooting, 7 rebounds, 2 fouls. Pretty disappointing night on the rest of the stat line for Chris Bosh, to be honest. 13 of 15 from the line.
All right. It's not
you
bad.
Forget that he went to the line a lot.
Yeah. He's the original DeMar DeRozan.
Yeah.
Big DeMar. What else did he do? What was his field goal? What was his field goal? What was his shooting line again?
7 for 15.
Yeah, that's 27 points. That's a very Chris Bosh night. Okay, we got Chris Bosh. Anthony Parker.
Yes, 10 points, 3 for 5, 2 for 4 from three. A bunch of things under the three for the stat line, but. Very quiet but effective Anthony Parker game in 32 minutes.
Cool. Jermaine O'Neal.
Yes, 33 minutes. He scored 11 points, 4 for 14. He was the worst Raptors shooting the ball by far.
Yeah, sounds about right.
18 rebounds, though. Holy, 18 rebounds for the Big O.
All right. I'm hearing background noise again. What's going on with you today, man?
I don't know. It's not me.
You're a disaster.
Everything's closed.
No, I'm just hearing my voice come back through your side of the computer. But anyway, we'll power through it. Jose Calderon.
Jose Calderon did not play.
Ooh.
I assume he was injured.
Okay. Juan Dixon?
No.
No? Okay. What do I have out of the starters right now? Do I have three?
You've got 3 of 5.
Okay. So I'm looking at a point guard and a shooting guard, I guess?
You got the shooting guard.
Okay, so small forward and...
No. Think front court.
Is this when they played Andrea Bargnani at the three?
Yeah.
Oh my god.
Supersized Andrea Bargnani at the three. 12 points, 6 for 12 from the field. 3 assists and 4 rebounds.
Wow.
He missed both his three-point attempts.
Good God. Who would have played point guard in this game? It wasn't TJ Ford because he got traded for Jermaine O'Neal.
It's somebody who you might not think of.
Derek Martin?
Nope.
Shit. Okay, I'll come back to that. Carlos Delfino? Yeah.
Nope.
No?
The bench has a couple guys, actually three guys. You'll probably get everybody on the bench because okay. You got Chris Humphries already. The other three are pretty folklorish Raptors players.
Okay, Joey Graham.
No.
Wow.
Start giving hints.
No,
You've got four guys left.
No, hold on. I should be better at this, but I'm not. I feel like you. I think I'm in the ballpark for a lot of these guys.
I would not have gotten this far, so don't flatter me.
The point guard is bugging me, but I guess I can leave that. Folklorish Raptors.
Yeah, the starter wasn't, but the three bench players, I would say.
Okay. This is 2008, 2009.
Yep.
Oh, my God. Solomon Alibi. No, that's too early.
No.
Pop So. No, that's too late.
Nope.
Okay, give me the positions of the guys on the bench.
All right, we have two small forwards. We have a point guard.
Two small forwards and a point guard. And the other one's a point guard as well, who started.
Yeah.
No Derek Martin.
Nope.
You said no Juan Dixon, right?
Nope.
Jason Capono.
Yes.
Okay.
10 points, 4 of 8 shooting, 2 of 4 from three. 3 assists, 3 steals for Jason Capono.
Wow.
And a +2.
Wow. So I have two point guards and...
2 point guards and another small forward.
How do I not have any of the point guards?
He's a positionless small forward.
Will Solomon.
Yes, that's the starting point guard.
Oh, my God.
8 points in 34 minutes, 11 assists, double-double for Will Solomon. 5 for 9 from the field, 2 for 5 from three. This might be the best Will Solomon game.
Wow. I feel like I might have done this game before with Blake Murphy because he picked Will Solomon to be his sponsor when he was on the show. And I can't think of a better game that Will Solomon might have played.
No, 15 points is pretty good for a guy who I don't remember what his face looks like.
So I need a point guard and a small forward.
Yes.
And a positionless small forward at that.
Yes.
So not Andrea Bargnani, we've already gotten him.
A man of many talents who once expressed those talents with a different colored ball.
What the hell?
That's a great hint. It doesn't give it to you, but it kind of gives it to
Well, it
you.
sounds like a 3-point contest guy. And that's Jason
No.
Capono.
No.
Played in Europe then?
No. Played for a team, a fictional team.
The Wizards?
Oh, no. A fictional team from a borough in New York who travel the world.
Jamario Moon.
Yes,
All
8 points,
right.
2 for 4 from the field, 0 for 1 from 3, 4 of 5 from the line, 5 rebounds, 4 assists, a plus 9.
I always feel like Jamario Moon was later, like in the dark years after Bosch, but he was like a lot earlier than I think I remember.
No, he was definitely present for some of the better stuff too. And he had his own Raptors HQ site.
Yes, that's true. Oh yeah, we dove into that big time. Okay, last one's a point guard.
Last
Should
guy,
I know this person?
definitely the most folklorish of the three.
And it's not Derek Martin. I keep coming back to Derek Martin,
I'm
but
really disappointed that you aren't getting this guy because you had him in your Twitter bio.
Omar Cook?
No. Oh, no, maybe I got that wrong. You did not have him in your Twitter profile.
Oh. I was gonna say, Omar Cook, he made an appearance in this random game 3 years after he was with the Raptors? No.
Same number of letters.
It's not Ben Uzo.
That's not the same amount of letters.
Uzo and
Ben
Cook.
Uzo, the full
Oh,
thing.
the full thing. Eight letters.
Oh, yeah.
Oh God. Okay, I don't know. You gotta tell me.
Roko
Oh, fuck that.
Ukic.
Are you talking about my pinned tweet where I had Euro Slokar in my pinned tweet? I
yes,
think
I
that might
was.
be it, yeah.
0 points, 0 for 3 from the field in 14 minutes, backing up Will Solomon.
What a
And that.
disastrous point guard. Like, think about how the point guard position has developed over the last 10 years. Is there any team in the league with point guards as bad as Will Solomon and Roko Ukic?
Who needs them? You've got 3 7-footers on your starting lineup.
Oh my God, what a disaster this season was.
That's how bad Bargnani was, is they actually tried to solve his problems of not being aggressive by playing him at small forward. In the playoffs, too.
Well, I think I did all right this time around.
8 for 9 with a few hints. Yeah,
Yeah.
that was pretty good. It was entertaining, at least.
Better than you.
Yeah,
I'm
well.
glad you were able to get it together after not being able to host it for the first 12 times.
I haven't done an HQ overtime in almost a year and a half,
Yeah, what
so
happened to
maybe.
that, man? I know you're an adult with like things to do, but what the hell?
Yeah, I'm an adult. It's hard to really break things down well right after the game's over. I feel like this is better suited for real
Yes,
thoughts.
this podcast for all your great analysis of everything. Yeah, that's what we do.
That's it.
I guess we can wrap the podcast. I guess I can take back the hosting duties for now to wrap things up.
Please do.
First of all, congrats on your new job, buddy.
Thank you.
You're working with
Yeah.
the University of Manitoba's social team?
Yeah, well, there's no team, it's just me. It's
Oh.
a new position. The University of Manitoba Bisons, all 15 sports, social media, multimedia. So I will be tweeting from those accounts and being in cahoots with Mitch Robson, who apparently runs some sort of media conglomerate that covers Canadian university sports, which it's just awful. Just awful that a child can run a whole media wing.
Okay, now we're gonna play around where I name all 15 sports that you oversee.
Oh, I can't even do
I
that.
won't do it.
I'll do it with you.
No, I don't want to do that to the listeners. They've stuck with us long enough. This was fun, man. It was good to catch up. It's been a while. In the middle of July, at some point, you and Russell are gonna come on a pod with me, and we're gonna go over our preseason prop bets, which we made almost a year ago now, but we'll get into them. And see who was right, who was wrong. I feel like I was looking back over them a couple months ago, and I think we royally fucked them up. So we'll go through that. Anything that people can look for from you on the site or anything else coming up?
No, things are pretty quiet right now. I think I'll probably write something come free agency. Shout out to the Same Page team. I was writing for music there, but Daniel gracefully shut down the site this week.
Yeah.
So one less outlet for me, more focus on the Raptors. But obviously it's a pretty quiet time right now. A lot of the insider takes are coming from people a lot smarter than me. So when it comes down to analyzing the moves that are eventually made, that's probably when I'll pick things up again.
Cool, man. Please listen to Locked On Raptors. Had an episode today with Joel Wolf on, as I mentioned. Tomorrow I'm going to have James Herbert from CBSSports.com on, so stay tuned for that as well. That'll be fun. Thanks for tuning in. You can find the headquarters on iTunes. Please leave a rating or a review there. I'm probably going to write something either by Friday or most likely in next week or even in the middle of July. It might make more sense about the Raptors guys all on rookie contracts and kind of rank them, power rank them a little bit. I'm going to try to go deep on it with some tape and things like that as well. So that might be a thing to come a little bit later on, but stay tuned for that. And yeah, that'll do it. We'll hopefully do another podcast next week. I know we've been doing the bi-weekly thing for the last couple weeks here, but if things happen between now and Tuesday or Wednesday of next week, we'll definitely reconvene to talk about it. John, thank you for coming on, man, and we'll talk to you soon.
All right, thanks for having me.
All right, thanks, everybody, and talk to you next week or the week after or whenever the hell we do it again. Cheers.
Over!